gentlemen, you're listening to the Mac and T Show podcast. Here are your hosts, Ryan McKay and T. David.
This is the Mac and T Show. This is the Mac and T Show. We talk movies and TV shows, sports and world news, coasting like on a world cruise. Hosted by Brian McKay and T. Davis. Yeah. You can't tame us. We're going to the top. We're becoming famous.
What time is it?
It's time for the Mac and T Show.
What time is it?
I said it's time for the Mac and T Show.
Welcome back to the Mac and T Show podcast. T, would you like to share for a few minutes, maybe a story or two of your time getting to tour a very special place in our country?
So, people, you know, this morning I was blessed to be able to go with some of my students and colleagues to the African American Art and Culture Museum in Washington, D.C. It's a very, very, very nice place. If you like to go visit, please do so, because, well, one is free, but however, you do have to get tickets well in advance. So I feel like I saw something that you had to get tickets right now for June, and so next month will probably be for July and so forth. Anyway, very, very well done. It was nice to be able to, architects that her firm, and she was the she coordinated, she was the lead architect on the project that built the museum, and she came and talked with us, and she was project took 8 years, which is crazy, right? It might take longer than that, but to build it, like, they had to bid for it, and then after you get the bid, or you the top six in the nation, you gotta put your specs forward, so you know they grinding and trying to figure out, like, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. And she talked about how all that went down and how they had dug down how many feet deep, and then the people that were putting all the inside part, like, they just built the building, like, then there's somebody else that's like the design of how it's gonna flow. They're like, oh, we need y'all to dig down deeper. So it was a lot that went into the building. And she talked about a porch, which is important in African-American history. Not so much now, because we don't go outside as much and we don't have big homes with yards, but a lot of people spent a lot of time on porches back in the day. And so she talked about how important that was to the project. And this is the last piece of... like, they won't build anything else around the monuments or anything. From her understanding and from what she was saying, this is the last thing that'll be built in that area. And so it was a lovely piece. The space is very nice. If you do go, make sure you eat before you go in there, unless you go ahead and save up your money. Because people that did eat in there, they spent like $30 for a plate, and I was just like, yeah, I'm not gonna be able to do that, but however, I'm gonna enjoy the rest of the plate. Although, man, this place has been rated as one of the top restaurants in the country, so, I mean, if you're all into food and you're a foodie, you might be like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna enjoy that part, but be mindful of that if you go with children and all, that you might want to take the extra money, because it's gonna take, I mean, I didn't see everything, and we were there from like 11 to 5, so. It takes a while. If you like me and you feel some kind of way when you see all the stuff about slavery, get your mind right, because you're going to see it all. Like, they show a lot of everything. So, yeah, very nice. It was a good experience, good trip, good time with people that I work with. But you know you don't get to kind of hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Very nice. I know that's one of the things on my bucket list to see. So I definitely Definitely gonna try and get up there.
Sometime. Yeah, try to get up there. Make sure you get the tickets. You probably can get them now for July.
Well, hey, that's a good thing. That means a lot of people's interested in seeing it.
Yeah, it sold me. It was a, and they keep the flow of it really nice. Certain, like, you can take pictures in it. I took several pictures. You can take pictures. The only place that you could take pictures was in Emmett Till's little section. But you can take pictures everywhere else. Like, they didn't, or video or whatever. They didn't, like, they weren't trying to just keep, like, the memories to themselves. Like, so you could have a, you have a camera or your phone or whatever. So that was cool.
Nice. So, let's see. It's kind of, you know, I'm good at transitions usually, but I don't really know how to transition from National African American History and Culture. Speaking of African American history and culture, the NBA.
I cannot.
Wait. And not just that, I'm going to talk about a white player. Excuse me.
That's hilarious.
Anyway, no. Okay, get serious. We're real good in. Excuse me. All right, Kevin Love. Last week, or might have been a week before last, I was at the Southland Conference basketball tournament, so my whole week runs together. You know, everything's running together on me. So, some point in the last 2 weeks, Kevin Love wrote an article for the Players Tribune, and he spoke about his dealings with mental health issues. He apparently, in early November, went through a panic attack during a game against the Atlanta Hawks. He talked about, you know, basically it having very little to do with basketball and more or less things that he was dealing with off the court, just kind of all coming together in a moment, and he didn't know what was going on. He had kind of just lost consciousness for a minute, winds up in the locker room, and then all of a sudden he's being whisked off to the Cleveland Clinic for tests, and you know, now he talks about how he's going through therapy sessions with a therapist, and just the way he has dealt with that. You know, at first he kind of was hesitant to do anything because, you know, he was always taught as being a man, you're supposed to be tough, you're supposed to not, you know, show your weaknesses and being vulnerable and things like that, because that's the way he's always been taught. So he was very reluctant to, you know, to let anybody in and let anybody know anything about this. Now he's realizing that the more you share, the more, you know, people are gonna, you know, be able to relate to your issue, and maybe you can help someone else who's struggling, and you know, things like, you know, just trying to get through issues of this matter. I know you have probably some information that you could share on this subject, and I hate to just do this because people tell me all the time outside of this podcast that most times it sounds like you're just giving T an interview, but if for all our listeners, T actually has, you know, a background in this, is kind of somewhat related to the field of her study and kind of what she does now. So, do you have anything you could share on the mental health issues?
So, this is what I'll say. When we use, a lot of times when we use the word mental health, I don't think we use it accurately. And that's partly because of television and the news or whatnot. And I said in the same framework as diet. So, people are like, oh, you're on a diet. We all on a diet. Have you... No, we all on some kind of diet.
Right.
And so, but we use the word diet like it's always in related to losing weight. But diet is not about losing weight. Like, I'm on a diet and I'm not trying to lose weight. Diet is like the regimen of food that I eat. But people use diet wrong. Mental health. Like, we are all striving for mental health, but there's a continuum of health where you are mentally healthy and in a good place, and then all the way to where you are mentally ill and maybe in not so great space. So, and that's a continuum in between. So when we use mental health, like, we all should be striving to be mentally healthy. Like, And you may be in and out of, like, you're in good space sometimes, and you might go through a spell where you're not in such a good space mentally sometimes, and you have your coping mechanisms or whatever that helps you keep you, let's say, what's the word, in a homeostatic place, in homeostasis. Right. So, yeah, mental health, we use it so loosely, and especially when we start to hear about shootings and all, we want to throw mental health word around. And I mean, what we do need is more mental health facilities, because we know that a number, and a large number, of people that are incarcerated are incarcerated because they are dealing with some kind of mental health issue, and they have used drugs or some alcohol, which is a drug. They are using it as a coping mechanism because, like with this situation with Kevin Love, he's in a space where he actually has money and can go get, if he actually decides to go get help. A lot of people, that's, you know, there's not a lot of mental health facilities, and then there's still a stigma about, you know, I need a mental day, a mental break. And people be like, oh, you crazy. Well, you know, that's not helping people want to come out and say, oh, I'm dealing with depression, or I'm dealing with post-traumatic stress, or I'm having panic attacks. So we got a lot of work to do around this field. One thing besides talking about, and this is just related because of the Parkland situation, but we want to keep saying, oh, mental health checks, mental health checks. Well, one, we don't have enough facilities for people to actually be diagnosed and be helped with anything. So it don't even matter. For the number of people that would actually have been diagnosed with something, they're probably not interested in guns. And like just doing a mental health background check ain't going to help with the number of people that have weapons.
Right.
But yeah, mental health is, you know, we push our people to be healthy on all the planes, and mental health, financial health, physical health, environmental health, spiritual health, social health. Like, so there's so many things and pieces that we encourage people to be healthy in. So for the holistic person and not just, oh, being in good health physically, and that will be your diet and exercise. And that's usually the things we hear about. And usually when we hear mental health, it's because somebody has started shooting somebody, and now we want to talk about it. But then it'll fade to black, and we won't hear about it again until something else jump off, and we're like, oh, mental health is the reason that happened, unfortunately. But I give, I'm happy that Kevin Love is coming out, because it's more guys than him dealing with this. And it may not be a panic attack that they're dealing with. They're dealing with some kind of issues from their past, from their childhood, or whatever. It could be, if we look at, say, Lamar Odom, you know, he had that death of that baby that I don't think he ever dealt with, which he started doing. And this is totally me speculating, but I suspect that his drug use was him trying to cope with whatever he was dealing with mentally, with the loss of that child, that he could never get over that hump. And I don't think we ever heard of him saying, oh, he went to talk to a therapist so they could talk with him and get through it. And so it's more than love dealing with these kind of things. But the more people come out and talk about it, it's helpful. And the more we start telling our little boys to man up, will be helpful too, because I don't really know what man up means, but
yeah, I've never understood that whole mindset, because it just, I don't know. Maybe it's because I've been around women's sports all my life, and I can relate, you know, to females in that way. Just being around all that, just the whole man up thing and the be a man deal. It shouldn't be that way, because you're encouraging
unhealthy.
Yeah.
Coping with your emotions.
Correct.
And so it's starting to get like that with women. You hear now women, you hear people, put your big girl panties on.
Yes.
Which is a similar statement as to man up. If you need can cry, go have a good cry. It's good for your soul.
It's cleans healthy. Out your eyes. Yes. I mean, it's been proven that it is healthy.
You go have a good cry, most people feel better. Yeah. They might not want to do it, but usually after you have a good cry and let that flush all out, you feel a little better. But holding it in is not going to be healthy. And so, but we tell, you know, don't cry. It's going to be okay. Well, it's going to be okay or not, go ahead and cry and get that out your system. But yeah, I mean, I know people now, like recently I had on Stop the Stigma, little band, and people was asking me what it was about, and we were talking about mental health and trying to make it not so taboo to talk about. And then you hear people saying, oh, well, yeah, I want one because I'm dealing with this. I want one because I'm dealing with that. And people are dealing with a lot. And while you might look at social media and look at their pages and think they got the best life ever, well, that's all they put on there is the good stuff. People rarely put in how awful their life is on Facebook and Instagram. Uh-huh. They want you to see how great their life is. And then you don't know when somebody commits suicide or something. They're like, what happened? You know, I thought they were happy. Yeah, they weren't.
Yeah.
So I just want to say one more thing that's related to this and to the African American Art Museum, since we had a tough transition.
Go ahead.
I thought it was interesting how, and this is the correlation, I thought it was interesting how he was like, for 29 years, I thought about mental health as someone else's problem.
Right.
Until it happened to him. And that was the same, like, it's a quote on the wall in Emmett Till's little section of the museum where his mother says that when she would watch whatever was going down in the South with slaves, she said, and she always thought that it was just their problem in the South until her son went down to Mississippi and was murdered. And then she realized that it was our problem. So I found that to be a correlation, not that you necessarily need one at this point, but
no, that's
it. A lot of people, you know, feel like, oh, that ain't my problem until it happens to you.
Yeah, that's, you hear that way too often in situations and in any walks of life.
I don't want to keep harping on the school shooting, but none of the people at Parkland, when it happened in these other places, they move on with their life. It's not in this small town, whatever, it ain't going to happen here. And then it happens. With this church shootings, what everybody be saying, oh, this, I never thought that would have happened.
Yeah, as you brought the school shooting, just to keep on that little theme right there, I know just this past weekend, just yesterday actually, a family member of mine who went on a interview at one of the local elementary/middle schools down here, they said that when they went to the interview, they didn't really know, you know, where they were going, where the office was, so they went into couple of different doors and wound up being the wrong doors, but literally they could have walked inside the building. There was doors open all over the place. There was no one manning any doors. There was, you know, classroom doors just wide open. I mean, there was kids, you know, walking single file lines to, you know, different places in the building, and they could have, you know, been, if they were the killer, you know, someone.
If they had malicious intent, they could have did whatever.
They could have done some real damage. And that just goes along with what you said is, you know, you never know. You never think, okay, that doesn't affect me. You know, what happened at Parkland doesn't affect me until it does. You know, that could have been a situation where, you know, could have been really disastrous.
And one of the things that you find is, so I don't know if you saw the Facebook post where somebody had put that this one night school, I think I want to say they were in Minnesota, they had all these bulletproof doors and they had this smoke that comes down that could cloud up the hallway so you couldn't see. And the kids had this way of, they had some drill where they all knew how to get down and get behind their desk. And I think the school paid $400,000 or something So the one person that showed me the video, I was like, that ain't good. And the, she was just gung-ho and thought it was the best thing ever. And I was like, it's not so much that it's not good because you have to do it. It's just the fact that most places can't afford to do that. We got teachers out here, and we talked about this on a podcast in the past. Uh-huh. We got teachers out here using their money, the little bit of money they make, and trying to make sure that they have supplies.
Right.
So where are they going to get some money to put $400,000 worth of door, you bulletproof doors and all this other stuff in when they can't even buy paper and crayons and paints and pencils, tissues?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we got a lot of work to do, America. Like, because our education system, besides the shooting stuff, it's just bad. There's no reason for somebody that's not barely making money that got to be putting money or going on these websites begging other people that's philanthropic to fund them and pay for this and pay for that. You know, it's a site like that.
Oh, yeah.
Your sister and the, yeah.
Yeah, my sister works at a low-income school.
I don't know if it's just low income.
I'm not,
if you ain't in the upper echelon, I think a lot of these places are like that.
I don't know the correct wording for it, but I know it's just their funds are limited, and you know, because they're like, I think they keep grading out lower grades. I don't know how the grading system works with school districts, but they're always one of the lowest graded because of, you know, where they are as far as in their surrounding community and, you know, and their test scores, things like that. So because of their lower grade, they get, you know, the least funds out of every school district down here. And they basically have to do a lot of things on their own and be creative with what they can get on their own to be able to teach classes. So, yes, definitely a problem.
And that's crazy.
Yeah. So.
So, anyway, on a lighter note, go to Lakers would be Cleveland. All right. Go ahead.
And switch it over to college basketball. We've spoken about this religiously, it seems like, since we started back in, you know, even in seasons of
our episode. Let me get my bracket. Hold on.
Oh, no. And even in seasons past, we talked about this whole college basketball and the pay.
Oh, okay.
You know, whether or not to pay athletes. Well, there was an article I found interesting. It's on Deadspin. It's from, I believe the author is Patrick Ruby. He talks about the title of the article, "This is How to Pay College Athletes." He goes through different scenarios that people have brought up as far as, you know, would be obstacles in paying athletes. A couple of them that were my favorite. He talked about if we have a free market without some sort of pay framework and salary cap, smaller, poorer schools won't be able to compete with the power conference schools for the best athletes, and parity would be dead. And his explanation for, you know, dealing with that is they don't compete now. Kentucky and Duke compete with each other for the top tier high school basketball talent, and the Ball States and Davidsons of the world compete for the lower rated players. Introducing competitive bidding and those obstacles still stay mostly the same. You got the well-funded Blue Bloods will be bidding against peers from McDonald's All-Americans, mid-majors bidding against people like Steph Curry and the like. You know, three and four-star players. And let's see, another one. He talked about Title IX and the way it could affect things. And he basically said, you know, if you go to a situation where you're basically paying, you know, and kids are going to have to start doing their own taxes on the money they get, that's going to be, you know, government-wise, it's going to be, you know, the same for women and men. And unfortunately, women and men now don't get paid, the same as far as, you know, in business world. You know, it's always a stigma that men get paid more than the women, that, you know, before they even walk through the door. And that would be the same here, sadly. And the third one I want to talk about, let's see. No, that's not it. One time. Oh, this one, he says, the argument where you can't pay the starting quarterback more than the third string tackle. It would destroy team chemistry. You look at the NFL, for example. The highest paid players are the quarterback. The best quarterbacks.
And nobody out there crying talking about, well, I ain't finna block for him because he making way more guaranteed money than I can.
Right. And I mean, there's going to be people complaining that they don't get paid, but that don't stop them from playing. That don't stop them from doing their job. Just like it wouldn't in the NCAA.
And if they need to, they can get a players association.
Right.
They got the stack or SAC or whatever you call it, student something committed. They'll just have to make that a players association.
I just thought this article was really interesting. I thought it had a lot of good points. And because people are always going to have these, well, what if this happens? What if that happens? And like the one where could players be fined, cut, or traded? And you don't see that being necessarily an issue because, let's see what he say. Players trade salary or benefits for a 4-year guaranteed or no cut clause. Others may bargain. Oh, it's doubtful either athletes or schools who want trade provisions. Although he was basing that mostly on how infrequently students and professors get traded.
Well, I'll say this. I like that part because, well, it'd be too much movement, but I don't think as many people would move as we might think. Right. I just feel like, so the coach you like gets fired or leaves. So now you should be able to leave because while I love the University of Florida, I might have come to the University of Florida because I thought that Dan Mullins was going to run an offense that I like and that I fit in. But now Dan Mullins, and of course Dan Mullins just got here, but Dan Mullins decided to leave. Well, let's say Mississippi State. So I came there for a reason, but then Dan Mullins leave and go to Florida. Now I'm here. I don't know who this next coach is. He might want to run a gun or he might want to ground a pound. And I might want to run a gun. Now my skill set don't fit for this coach, and now I'm stuck here because the NCAA said I can't leave, but the coach has left.
Right.
And it ain't that they just go because they like the coach, and that's part of it, but they like the style of play. Like, and so now I just get what I get. And if the coach happen to have a style of play that fits my skill set, good. If not, you're just going to have to figure it out.
Yeah, like I say, every single time we finish topic like this, we're going to continue to talk about this as the weeks go by, but it's just, this article lays out a lot of information that I think, you know.
I swear I thought he was listening to us last week. Because you remember I was talking about this
when we were saying. When I read it, I said, we just talked about this.
Stuff that I was saying. And that the guy from the First Thing First was saying. I was like, yeah, this works perfectly.
Yeah. All right,
let's get it done.
Yeah, it definitely does. But staying with college basketball, the tournament bracket for the men's side was released yesterday, and I'm not going to sit here.
Girls are today, right?
Girls are tonight, yes.
Okay.
I did not watch the bracket reveal. I was on my way back from Texas, so did not get to see it live. No, a lot of people complained because, you know, it was on, I think, TBS or TNT this year. And they did things a little differently. They first announced every automatic bid alphabetically. And I think people got confused and people were complaining, like, okay.
No, we used to send the first four in. The top one seeds.
Right.
I need them not to be straying away too far from the fold now. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
and people were just sitting there. I think people got more and more frustrated. Just give me the bracket. Give me one section at a time like you used to do it, and let's not change things. I mean, I can see where that could be confusing because you're sitting there, you want to see each, like, give me the South region.
Right. And then, you get to top four. Here you go.
Yeah.
One, in the South region, Virginia. And then the second seed, Cincinnati. And then they fill out the whole region before they go to the next one, don't they?
Right. Mm-hmm. They do, I think they do like a quadrant at a time. They do like,
each.
Yeah.
Top seed, Villanova.
Yeah, they Lord, do like they do the Villanova.
They're gonna beat up on his social ad.
So here's what I wanted to do today. And I want to continue this each week as the tournament progresses. You know, obviously our picks will change because that's just the way the tournament works.
Shout out. Can I say this?
Okay.
People, I think it's Warren Buffett said that if you can get a perfect bracket, it'll give you $1 million a year every year for the rest of your life. All right, thank you. Go ahead.
Yes, yes, yes. And,
a lot of bracket. I don't know why you go to get in his pool. So yes, he know that you actually did.
Please go out and check that out because it's definitely worth it. if you could, hey, you never know. Someday it's gonna happen for somebody.
Somebody that don't even watch basketball that would do it.
That's what makes me sick about the whole process.
Early guessing.
But anyway, here's what I want to do today. I want to you and I go and we pick our Final Four teams. Early.
Oh, really?
Yeah, early predictions for the Final Four. Then after we give each other our Final Four picks, I want to go in teams on the 9 through 16 level. Who we think in each like South, East, blah, blah, you know, each bracket. Who do we think has a chance to be to make a run? What 9 through 16 team do we have to make a run in each quadrant? So, so I'll go first so I give you a chance to look at your bracket.
Oh, Lord, this is so sad. Go ahead.
So, my Final Four, as of today, I filled it out just this morning.
You got me beat. Go ahead.
I have University of Virginia against UNC in an ACC championship rematch. And on the other side, I have Mike White and Florida Gators playing against the school his dad is AD of, and that other school on Chapel,
the Dukies.
Yeah, that other school in Carolina, the Duke Blue Devils.
Let's see.
And, okay, go ahead.
I'll take North Carolina. Seen them, yeah. I have seen these. I think Virginia is tough enough to make it out.
I think people will be a problem. People are gonna have problems going on Virginia.
And that's the same thing with Cincinnati because they're a bunch of bruisers. I was like, these boys out here.
Yes.
I don't know if they're gonna call this in the NCAA tournament or not. Y'all fighting a lot bit. anyway. Virginia, they seen Xavier, but I don't know that I want to go with them. I go with the North Carolina because of the coaching. Mm-hmm. Their bracket don't seem to be too hard either. Let's look over here in the East. My spirit would say Florida, but we so not good. I can't believe you said that. I mean, they are. If they can't score, they ain't doing nothing.
Listen, I got faith. I got faith.
Okay. Well, you go ahead. Villanova, and I'll take I've seen Kansas, and I've seen Duke. And I don't know that I like either of them. I'm going to take. I don't like them enough to take that. I was about to say Michigan State. I'll take Duke right now.
Okay. So really the only change you have Villanova instead of Florida. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. My 9 through 16 who I think can make a run in the South region. I'm gonna go with Loyola Chicago. They have, I think, five or six players who all score in double figures. They have, and not only do they score in double figures, they shoot 50% or better from the field. I really like this. I like the coach, Porter. I can't say his last name. Monser, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think is his last name. They really have a chance in that region, just where they're put. I think they have a good chance to upset Miami in the first round. And then Tennessee, they could get them. I think they're going to have a little trouble when they run into probably Cincinnati in the Sweet 16. But, yeah, that's my pick for the South. For the East, I'm going to go with the team I just saw in Southland Conference, Stephen F. Austin. Big, big physical guards that could light it up. Post players, they play typically like an NBA format with their post players. They got guys that can light it up from outside. And, you know, they just, I think their RPI is like 104. But I know from watching them this week, I mean, they can do some damage if they get the right, you know, the right matchup. Let's see, West, I'm going to go with the Jackrabbits, South Dakota State. Yes. Well, the reason I know that is because of the women. South Dakota State's always, you know, one of those teams that just knocks people out in the women's side. And I think they're going to do the same here, just like Loyola Chicago. A bunch of different guys who all shoot 50% or better from the field, really efficient on offense, and can, you know, break your heart on defense. They kind of have like a Virginia mentality when it comes to defense. So that's my West pick. Midwest, I'm going to roll with College of Charleston. Always, every year, is a threat to do some damage. And they have a great, you know, matchup all the way through. I mean, Auburn.
Well, Auburn better watch out, because I heard they was on chill mode when they got announced they got in.
Not only that, they've lost two players to injury, I believe. Who just really hurt them, and that gave them fits. I mean, Alabama destroyed them in the second half of their game in the SEC tournament. So College of Charleston has a good chance to be a 4-13 upset. Then they have probably Clemson or New Mexico State after that, which is, you know, obviously another game that could do some damage in. And as Kansas has been so up and down this year. If they wind up playing Kansas in I guess that would be the Sweet 16.
Yeah, that's why I didn't pick them, because they've been all over.
So you never know. So Charleston will be my pick in that bracket.
I have nothing.
I've watched so many conference tournament games over the last couple of weeks. I got all these teams. Like, that's what I saw Loyola Chicago. Look, I just happened up on them. And I love
a lot of the games I watch have been ACC games because of the area of the country I'm in. They have the SEC on CBS, but usually somebody I don't want to see. I don't think Kentucky that good. Cincinnati, I did see them, and I know we talking about nine, whatever, but I don't think I've seen enough of these people to even say.
Well, that's fine. You'll be able to see them, you know.
Yeah, and I have my CBS.com on my computer.
Right. So you'll be able to catch some games in next week.
It should be fun, because this year, I mean, even like Virginia lost, like, it's no clear. These one seeds going to have to be careful. Like, Syracuse, like, I'm surprised they're in this last four thing, but Syracuse, when they playing well, that zone give people fits.
Yeah, no matter who's running it.
Yeah. I ain't seen no UCLA. Have you seen them?
I've not seen them this year, but
what is UCLA doing it? This is bad.
Pac-12.
Can I say this last four thing, or this first four? I don't like it. Can we just go back to 64?
Yeah.
I don't like this at all. Why are we doing this? Is this for money? What is the point?
it's definitely for money. And I mean, honestly, if you're gonna do what, if you're gonna do 68, you might as well do 72 and quit fooling with that last four in and, you know, last four out or whatever. Because, like, I'm gonna say it right now, I understand they got upset in their conference tournament, and they, you know, their conference is not real high RPI-wise, not one of the power six. But Kermit Davis in Middle Tennessee should be in the field.
And let that's me tell what you I was guys. Looking for. I'm glad you said that, because I kept saying, it's somebody. And I was like, no, that's Murray State. And I was like, it should be another one. But anyway, go ahead.
Listen, guys, there's a picture going around the internet right now of the, I can't think of the kid's name, but Middle Tennessee, obviously, you know, everybody gets together and watches the, you know, the bracket reveal, and there's a kid from Middle Tennessee. The rest of the team has gotten up and left, and he's just sitting there, and he's just staring at the screen, and he looks so brokenhearted, and it just makes you feel for the kid so bad. They should be in this tournament. I don't care if they got
it. Let's see. You said there's a picture. Let me see.
There's a picture of a kid. I wish I remember his name.
Oh, the images might not work. Come up.
I feel so bad for him. Yes,
you don't have that. Well, here's the thing. When Jalen Rose was talking crazy out of his head about them sitting out, when you go to the NCAA tournament, it's fun. It's something like you don't want to miss it. I know somebody might need to take a stand. They're going to have to take it during the year because you can't take it now. Like, if you get invited to this, it's, besides, you know, all of the gear, extra gear and stuff you get, they get all that anyway.
Right.
It's just fun. It's a fun atmosphere. Got your band out. It's totally different atmosphere from your conference tournaments. So I can't find a picture of the kid. That's so sad. I feel sad for him.
Yeah, wait. When you actually do find it, if I find it beforehand, I'll send it to you. But it's so sad. I feel so bad for him.
Well, maybe I can go to NIT. Win it all.
Yeah, I hope so. And then Kermit be named Ole Miss's next head coach. But that's neither here nor there.
They're gonna need somebody and the women.
Yeah, the women as well. Interesting. Well, do you have anything else before we sign off?
Apparently you didn't go see the movie.
I did not. I have not.
Sorry, people.
This week, I promise to get it done. I promise to get it done this week.
And well, I'll tell y'all this. $1 billion is a ridiculous amount of money for this movie to make. Have you seen The Hitman Bodyguard?
I have, yes.
Okay, so when I watched the trailer for that, I have, like, that's like a 2-year-old, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, I don't know what I was thinking, but I wasn't thinking what I saw. It was actually a better movie than the trailer led me to believe.
Yeah. Yeah, the trailer.
Did you not think that that was supposed to be more comedy than it was? It has some funny pieces, but it seemed like the trailer led you to believe, or it led me to believe, let me say, that it was more comedy than serious.
Yeah, because in the trailer, they showed every single funny part in the movie.
And so I was like, oh, whatever. But then I watched it yesterday.
It actually had a point.
And I was like, this movie could have done better probably if they hadn't have made it like it was going to be a comedy.
Right.
But anyway, y'all go out and check it out if you haven't seen. Go to Red Box, Blue Box, whatever they got now. Oh. Netflix may or may not have it up. Check it out. Two Guns is good too. Well, the stuff I just now got around to watching.
And I promise people, and I promise T, I will get and I will see Black Panther this week. Yeah. And we'll talk about it, discuss it next week's show.
Oh, here it
is. So, as always, I'm one of your co-hosts, Brian McKay, and I am with
T. Marsh Madness is here, David.
And this has been the Mac and T Show podcast. Thank you for listening.
This is the Mac and T Show.
This is the Mac and T Show. We talk movies and TV shows, sports and world news, coasting like on a world cruise. Hosted by Brian Nikkei and T Davis. Yeah. You can't tame us. We're going to the top, we're becoming famous.
What time is it?
It's time for the Mac and T Show.
What time is it?
I said it's time for the Mac and T Show.